Penrose St. Francis Hospital. Mr. McMahon, I don't think you were here. Have you argued here before? Are you familiar with our rules and procedures?
In general, yes, Your Honor. Yes, I haven't probably argued here too recently, but I've argued here before.
This saved me a lot of time and trouble if you say you are and
I am,
proceed.
Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We're ready to hear Crowe versus Penrose.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Tom McMahon with Jones and Keller. I'm here on behalf of Dr. Crowe. He's the plaintiff and the appellant in this matter. In recent years, as you may have gleaned from the briefs, there have been a variety of administrative and other legal proceedings between Dr. Crowe and Penrose, Penrose down in Colorado Springs. For our purposes here today, what's relevant is that 4 years ago, Dr. Crowe filed common law claims against Penrose in El Paso County District Court. He did that over matters arising out of the peer review process that he and Penrose were then embroiled in. Penrose moved to dismiss that action, and that was denied. Penrose then moved for reconsideration, and that too was denied. Penrose then initiated an original proceeding in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ultimately ruled in the fall of 2007 that Dr. Crowe's claims were premature until he had exhausted administrative remedies by completing the peer review process. Once that ruling came down, that's exactly what Dr. Crowe did. He went back, he completed the peer review process, he thereby exhausted his administrative remedies. At that point, he refiled common law claims in district court against Penrose again. Penrose once again moved to dismiss. And this time, it argued that even though Dr. Crowe had completed the administrative exhaustion requirement, there was another whole separate requirement that the Supreme Court hadn't mentioned. And that separate requirement was exhaustion of judicial remedies, meaning pursuing a separate judicial review action in district court, that's point number one, and then point number two, obtaining a reversal there of the administrative result. Now, Penrose had made exactly that same argument to the Supreme Court in the original proceeding. It had cited the Westlake decision from the California Supreme Court back in the mid-1970s. Our Supreme Court actually cited Westlake, and it cited it for the very limited proposition that before a physician can file common law claims in court, the physician has to exhaust administrative remedies. And it ignored the rest of the Westlake opinion that Penrose had argued to it about exhausting judicial remedies. The Supreme Court, in addition to citing that California authority, cited authority from New Jersey, the District of Columbia, and Alaska. And basically, as can be gleaned from the Crowe opinion, the majority rule in the United States is that a physician needs to exhaust administrative remedies, complete the peer review process, and at that point, the physician can bring common law claims in court.
I have a question to ask you about the procedure, just sort of in general.
Yes, Your Honor.
At the time of the original proceeding, the actual administrative portion of the peer review had not been completed.
That is correct. That is correct.
And so I'm wondering if it's clear that that original proceeding really went to the existence of the judicial review of the administrative proceeding portion.
Well, what I can say, Your Honor, is that the opinion in Crowe is crystal clear that Dr. Crowe had to go back and complete the peer review process, and that was what was required in order to exhaust his remedies. And at four different pages in that opinion, and I think they're 161, 163, 165, and 169, the court said four times, we hold or we conclude that what's necessary is to exhaust administrative remedies before filing common law claims.
Don't they define that as final hospital board action?
Yes, they do, Your Honor, and that's been completed.
Well, the last one, they said to the hospital board's proceeding and court. I mean, right back to back, it says, we conclude, and it's just what you say, he has to exhaust his administrative remedies until the hospital board makes its final determination.
Right.
And they look over at the next column, and then it says, we hold, and it says the same thing, and then it has a little that says, or until court, I don't know, it mentions court proceedings.
Well, what, Your Honor, what I think the court said in Crow, and it addressed this at page 163 and at page 165, what it basically said was when the exhaustion requirement has been completed, a physician has really two approaches. One, they can go bring common law claims in court. Two, they can pursue a challenge of that board proceeding, meaning, I think, judicial review. So the Supreme Court.
So the third one and go through the Committee on Anti-Competitive
Conduct. That's the third one. That's correct, Your Honor, and that's not implicated here. So the two things that are at issue here is simply completing the administrative process and then bringing common law claims, and an alternative is to pursue judicial review in court.
Is the administrative process final, though, if it's subject to a judicial review process
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it is. I think the Supreme Court said several times in Crow that the critical point is the final board decision. That's the exact language, final board action or final board decision. It says that several
times. So I have a question about the procedure as well. So the amended complaint was to add a claim for breach of implied contract in this case, is that right?
In this case?
Yeah.
They were all contract claims, Your Honor. Let me see. I think I've got it right here. They were contract claims. Find the claims.
But I thought I read. But my real question is, why doesn't an amended claim create yet another ripeness issue?
The amended complaint?
Yes. Yeah.
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the ripeness issue was solved once the administrative remedies were exhausted by completing the peer review process.
So are there any claims at that point that you can bring not just related to the review process, not just related to breach of implied versus contract claim?
Well, I think if we had other claims that did not arise out of the peer review process, we could have brought them, and we could have brought them separately and independently. But these claims arise out of the peer review process, and one of the things that we are alleging is that by the hospital's failure to perform the peer review process properly in accordance with its own bylaws and requirements, that it breached the implied contract, breached the express contract. So the claims do arise out of the peer review process. That's what the Supreme Court said we had to complete administratively before we could come back and bring these claims, these common law claims in court. The Supreme Court in Crow cited two decisions of this court, Fenninger 1 and Fenninger 2, and both of those cases recognize that once the administrative process is complete, a physician can go straight to court with common law claims that arise out of that process. Then there's another decision of this court that came down after Crow, which is what I call the Dr. Pepper case. It's not soft drinks, it's a doctor over in Grand Junction. And that case again holds that once the administrative process is complete, a physician can go directly to court with common law claims, doesn't have to do anything else to challenge that final board action. There isn't any case in Colorado holding that a physician must pursue judicial review, much less obtain a reversal in judicial review. We think the Supreme Court's instruction in Crow was absolutely crystal clear that all that's needed is to exhaust the administrative remedies by completing peer review. After that, you're absolutely entitled to bring common law claims. Dr. Crow has done that, and we believe that Dr. Crow should be able to pursue his suit at this point. With that, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon. Mark Sabe of the law firm Cutac Rock, appearing on behalf of Penrose St. Francis Hospital. At council table with me is Peter Sabe, Associate General Counsel for Penrose.
You say at the outset, this is the first time in 16 years we've had the same case come up on appeal on the same issue. What's confusing about Crow?
Well, I think that Crow, the original Crow case at the Supreme Court, was
it's binding on us as law of the case, if nothing else.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so what is confusing about Crow?
Well, we're at a different stage of the proceedings now. I don't I don't think it's confusing. I think it's fairly straightforward when you understand the whole peer review process.
Well, at one point in Crow, they say he can bring common law claims after the final board action. What's confusing about that?
No, they use language that says he cannot bring common law claims without exhausting administrative remedies first. But the issue was not before the court about once he completed the administrative process, what the procedural statute would be, what type of claims he might bring at that point. And so the court did not attempt to elaborate under what circumstances he could then bring common law claims and what types of common law claims could be brought. So the key point that opposing counsel neglected to mention in his summary of the facts is that before he filed his second, his common law claims for a second time, he had first filed a case, a complaint for Rule 106A4 judicial review, recognizing that this was an administrative action. That was the proper way to appeal procedural issues that arose in the administrative process under Rule 106A4.
And the only thing that will be considered there is whether they had jurisdiction and acted arbitrarily and capriciously. Isn't that the limit of the review?
It's a limited review, but it does also address whether they acted inconsistent with the law. So they could. Reverse on judicial review if the peer review committees acted contrary to the peer review statutes.
And their own procedures.
Well, their procedures are statutorily required under the Colorado Professional Review Act, or CPRA. They're required to have bylaws that implement certain procedures if they want the immunity provided by the statute. And so the statute does not outline all of the aspects of the bylaws, but says they have to have bylaws if they want immunity. And so they adopt bylaws that comply with the basic requirements of CPRA, and there are additional aspects to it as well, because CPRA is sort of a broad brush approach to what the procedural requirements are. And so the bylaws include additional requirements. Now, not every violation of bylaws would constitute a violation of CPRA. It wouldn't be a statutory violation, because there are only certain procedural requirements that are statutory. And it would be my position that just any procedural violation.
What if we hadn't brought a 106?
Well,
could he then file his common law claims?
No, because Rule 106A4 is the way, because his common law claims, they're not tort claims. They are claims that simply address procedural errors in the administrative process. The only way you can address those issues is under Rule 106A4. That's an exclusive remedy according to the statutory scheme. The problem that we have here, there are several problems that we have with the way Dr. Crow has proceeded. First of all, he raised the same issues in two different forums at the same time. Filed his judicial review action, then filed common law claims addressing the identical facts and identical procedural errors. That's always a problem in the judicial arena, because first of all, it wastes judicial resources and creates a risk of inconsistent decisions when you've got the same issues pending in two different forums. Secondly, common law claims are premature at this stage of the game, because we don't know the outcome of the administrative process. It's on appeal right now under judicial review. If you look at the judicial review complaint that Dr. Crow filed, it specifically asked the court to restrain the enforcement of the peer review decision, to in essence reverse it and not allow it to be implemented, asked the court to compel Penrose to provide additional discovery, and asked the court to remand the case for further peer review proceedings. The bottom line is, in that judicial review action, which is still pending, the court could reverse with an order to reinstate Dr. Crow's privileges, could remand for further proceedings, further discovery. And because those are all options that are out there, we don't know what the outcome is. His common law claims are premature.
So is your argument that he has to wait until the 106 is done, or the 106 is it, and he can't file any common law claims?
Well, both.
Okay.
Yes, the first argument is that he cannot file any common law claims because Rule 106A4 is an exclusive remedy.
But if he can file common law claims, then he has to wait.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he has
and
to
if
wait.
If he lost in the 106, he couldn't bring them.
I beg your pardon?
If he lost in the 106,
that's
he couldn't
right.
bring them.
That's right. Because there's a binding decision. The premise for his common law claims is that the administrative decision was erroneous. Otherwise, he has no damages. If it was a correct decision, a decision that's upheld, an administrative decision that's valid and proper, he doesn't have any claims because he has no damages. If it's a valid decision, then...
I don't doubt what the... His losing the 106 proceeding, depending on how he loses it, might very well impair this case. But that's not the issue. The issue, does it prevent bringing the case? And you're saying it prevents bringing the case, right?
Yes, it does. Let me explain that. The court in Crow made a very interesting ruling, and it's a really important one to think about here. First of all, because Dr. Crow had argued that Brook v. Restaurant Services and the Feniger cases applied, the court had to address that issue, and the court said, distinguish Brook. Now, in Brook, the argument had been made that the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act barred plaintiff's common law claims by providing an exclusive remedy for sex discrimination in the workplace. And the court rejected that, said the act did not explicitly bar non-act claims and did not provide a comprehensive scheme for addressing sex discrimination. Therefore, we cannot conclude that the legislature intended to preempt common law claims that would otherwise be available. Now, in Crow, the court distinguished that and specifically made this finding. Our decision in Brook does not support Crow's argument. We reached that conclusion in Brook because the state's Anti-Discrimination Act did not provide a comprehensive scheme for addressing sex discrimination, and the plaintiff did not allege a claim under the act. By contrast, Crow's claims are all derived from his rights under the CIPRA, and the CIPRA is intended to provide a comprehensive scheme for addressing all peer review procedures. Now, that ruling that CIPRA, when the legislature adopted CIPRA, they intended to adopt a comprehensive scheme, is in essence a ruling that it preempts common law claims arising from peer review procedures.
But they talk repeatedly about common law claims throughout the opinion, don't they?
Yes, they do.
I mean, they say this exhaustion requirement found in subsections 1236.5, 106.7, and 8 applies even though the position is seeking money damages for common law claims arising out of the process rather than challenging the board's final decision.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like they're barring common law claims to me.
No, they weren't addressing this issue in that case because we weren't at that point. The administrative process had not even been completed. They were saying you must exhaust administrative remedies before filing common law claims, and the language you just quoted says nothing more than that.
Well, there may be some types of common law claims, though, that would be slightly apart from
yes.
the administrative process, like defamation or civil conspiracy
yes.
or, you know, something like this that might be related to the peer review, but still be a part.
That's right. That's a crucial point. Thank you. The court did not address all the varieties of claims that could be brought, and there are claims. And basically, this language about a comprehensive scheme, the court said, for addressing all peer review procedures. It didn't talk about tort claims or other potential claims, but it said when we're talking about peer review procedures, there's a comprehensive scheme.
Wouldn't your problem be pretty much solved if you just had this case held in abeyance until the peer review is over, until the court rules on the 106? You're going to want the ruling on the 106 one way or the other, both of you, presumably.
Yes, we will. It would not solve all the problems. There are a number of reasons for that. First of all, the language about there being a comprehensive scheme says that as it relates to peer review procedures, Rule 106A4, it means that Rule 106A4 is the exclusive remedy. That you don't, because that's what's provided for in CIPRA. CIPRA has an administrative process.
CIPRA doesn't do away with common law claims. It provides a means by which you can have immunity from common law claims. By giving you immunity, it must recognize there are common law claims that can be brought, and if you acted in good faith and in accordance with the statute, you get immunity. What more do you want?
No, that's right. But, again, we're not talking about just run-of-the-mill common law tort claims. We are talking in this case about a very different type of claim. It's a claim about the procedures of the administrative process itself, not a defamation claim. It's talking about the administrative process. In district court, if you don't like the procedures that the district court applied, you don't get to file a common law claim against the district court. You appeal it and have another court look at it and decide whether the procedures are correct. That's the same thing here. If you don't like the process that occurred in throughout the administrative proceedings, if you don't think you got a fair hearing, you appeal that. You don't file common law claims based on those. You appeal them. It's a procedural issue, an internal procedural issue. And that's why Rule 106A4 is the exclusive remedy.
Sabi, can you explain to us the additional hurdles, as your counterpart has put them, that you claim the Supreme Court has set forth based on the Westlake decision? Because I don't see those hurdles when I read the opinion.
Oh, no. Crow was an issue of first impression. It was dealing with the issues before it. It did not go on to the next issue, which is now before us.
You're asking us to read that into this decision.
Well,
based on that opinion, based on the Crow decision,
no,
and its citation of Westlake.
No, Crow cited Westlake for one proposition, but it cited the case with approval. It didn't distinguish any aspect of the case. But what we're really asking you to rule on is based on common sense, based on the fact that that Crow did decide that this is an administrative proceeding. And that has a lot of implications for how you handle, the binding effect of the administrative decision. How do you appeal procedural errors related to the administrative process? And so it's really general administrative law. And it makes a lot of sense to not allow common law claims based on administrative procedures unless the outcome is until the review process is completed and unless the outcome is reversed. Because unless it's reversed, there is a valid administrative decision that says the revocation of his privileges was proper. We had a hearing, the hearing panel decided that it was proper, the governing board reviewed that, decided it was proper, Dr. Crow complained about the process, filed a judicial review action. And if the court then decides that the process was proper and that the outcome of revocation of his privileges was proper, then he cannot assert any common law claims based on the revocation. He can't assert damages based on that revocation because you have a binding administrative decision that has an effect. You can't just ignore that and proceed with common law claims. It's a collateral attack to the peer review process then.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I have just one point I want to make in rebuttal. I want to cite two items for the same point. In the CPRA, section 1236.5106 paren 8 expressly states that nothing in this article shall preclude a physician otherwise aggrieved by the final action of a governing board from seeking other remedies available to them by law, except as provided in subsection 7, which deals with the Committee on Anti-Competitive Conduct. Supreme Court, in the Crow opinion at page 166, cited that express passage for the proposition that this subsection applies to a situation where a physician like Crow wishes to file common law claims for damages allegedly arising out of the peer review process. So both the CPRA and the Supreme Court and Crow recognize that filing common law damage claims are absolutely one of the avenues.
Counsel says you're not filing damages claims. Counsel says you're asking for another review of the administrative proceeding and asking for reinstatement.
No, I think there's some confusion, Your Honor. He was talking about the judicial review action. In this case, in this renewed litigation, we're absolutely asking for damages for Penrose not doing what it was supposed to do and breaching its contract and its implied contract. This is a damage action. Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank both counsel for their arguments. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.